Revelation chapter 5. Listen for the word of the Lord. Then I saw in the right hand of the one seated on the throne a scroll written on the inside and on the back, sealed with seven seals, and I saw a mighty angel proclaiming with a loud voice, "Who is worthy to open the scroll and to break its seals?" And no one in heaven or on earth or under the earth was able to open the scroll or to look into it. And I began to weep bitterly because no one was found worthy to open the scroll and to look into it. And then one of the elders said to me, "Do not weep. See, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, has conquered so that he can open the scroll and its seven seals." Then I saw between the throne and the four living creatures among the elders a lamb standing as if it had been slaughtered, having seven horns and seven eyes, which are the seven spirits God sent into all the earth. He went and took the scroll from the right hand of the one who was seated on the throne. And when he had taken the scroll, four living creatures and 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, each holding a harp and golden bowls full of incense, which are the prayers of the saints. They sing a new song, "You are worthy to take the scroll and to open its seals, for you were slaughtered, and by your blood you ransomed for God saints from every tribe and language and people and nation. You have made them to be a kingdom and priest serving our God, and they shall reign on earth." And then I looked, and I heard the voice of many angels surrounding the throne and living creatures and the elders, and they numbered myriads and myriads and thousands, singing and with full voice, "Worthy is the Lamb that was slaughtered to receive power and wealth and wisdom and might and honor and glory and blessing." And then I heard every creature in heaven and on earth and under the earth and in the sea and all that is in them singing, "To the one seated on the throne and to the Lamb be blessing and honor and glory and might forever and ever." And the four living creatures said, "Amen." And the elders fell down and worshiped. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
For many years, I taught at Austin Presbyterian Theological Seminary. And one of my mentors there was John Evans. And John always said, "You can never go wrong beginning with a thank you." And so I want to thank you and thank the Calvin Institute for Christian Worship and the Center for Excellence in Preaching for an opportunity to sing with you and to worship with you during these past several days. This has been a wonderful time. Have you felt yourselves enriched in worship? Have you felt your very being stirred in song? Do you feel empowered to share this once you go out of here? Well, I want you to picture, maybe tomorrow, maybe next week, you know how we can be when we get so excited that we don't notice that there are other people around and we start singing or humming to ourselves? I know you don't want your neighbor to know that you do that, but I know you do that. And as you're singing next week or tomorrow, someone might come out, ask you and say, "What are you singing? What are you singing?" We've learned a lot of new music this week, haven't we? Can you name one of the tunes that you've learned this week? What will you be singing? We've had a rich diet for these days of good song. Good song is something that enlivens our life. But you know, not all songs are good songs. If someone wants to write a good musical, one of their goals is that by the time you leave the musical, you'll be singing one of the tunes. If someone writes a good commercial, assuming that there is such a thing as a good commercial, one of their goals is that you'll be captured by a phrase or a tune. You deserve a break today. Plop, plop, fizz, fizz. What's in your wallet? Not only do we have these commercial endeavors to put bad songs in our head, popular music can do it as well. I remember as a young middle school person driving, or rather riding to camp, and we were listening to the radio, and I heard, "Yummy, yummy, yummy, I got love in my tummy." Do you want to be caught? Yummy, yummy, yummy? Do you want folks to know that plop, plop, fizz, fizz? You see, the songs that you sing are important. You bring a special gift. God has enriched you and charged you to sing with other believers. You know, we could say that, well, we can keep ourselves from singing bad songs just by insulating ourselves from any bad songs. You know, if you just had the right radio station, or never listened to radio, and if I just only watched PBS, then maybe I wouldn't have any commercials. That didn't work, did it? There is no insulation from bad song. But in Jesus Christ, there is an inoculation. An inoculation that lets you know the difference between good song and bad song. In verse 9, they sing a new song. Now let's look at the biblical witness about new song. One of the first things I think it's important for you to recognize is that this is not a culture that really likes new stuff. See, in the 21st century, we are really into new stuff. Oh, I need a new cell phone. I need a new iPod. I need a new printer. New is just part of our fabric in a way that it was not in antiquity. And so when a writer in antiquity talks about a new thing, they better be ready to make a good case. There is no positive bias for new in antiquity. The biblical witness. We know that in Judaism, in the Psalms and in Isaiah, there had already been passages that talked about singing a new song. And one of the things that you would recognize very quickly is if you went to those passages in Psalm 33 and 40 and 96 and 98 and 144 and 149, one of the things you would recognize almost immediately is that the content of that song is not new. They are the old affirmations. So by new, they don't mean novelty, something you hadn't seen before. Then what are they doing with new? The term for new in Hebrew is the same term as renewing. Let us sing a renewing song. One of the things that separates our song about God's victory that we just sang from Yummy, Yummy, Yummy is the affirmation that it makes. It is a renewing. When you sang that song, didn't you feel something going on? Didn't you anticipate the bread and the wine? Didn't it connect in a renewing fashion? No matter how many times you sing some songs, they will be new songs, for they will forever renew your spirit. Renewing. The language of Revelation 4 and 5 wants to connect this new song with the category worthy. You know, some songs just aren't worth your time. You know, there's songs, iTunes now gives you music. But you know, some of the music you get on iTunes, even if you pay nothing, you've paid too much. Remember that for the writer of Revelation, it's important that some things are of worth. This is a time of life and death in the church. You don't want to be wasting your song. The new song existed not just in the time of early Christianity, but even in the 20th century in Chile, you have a new song movement, Victor Jara. Through song, was able to rehearse the values of the Chilean people. We need not go as far as Chile. Bernice Reagan Johnson and John Michael Spencer remind us of how the old songs became new songs in the civil rights movement. You know the story. Charles Tinley's I Shall Overcome became We Shall Overcome. She writes, there were times when we could not speak resistance, but we could sing it. A song worth singing. As we look at Revelation 5, 9, we notice one of the characteristics of a good song is that it is cruciform. Part of what is so clear in this text. You are worthy to take the scroll because you were slaughtered. Does that make you want to go, huh? You are worthy to take the scroll because you were slaughtered. You are worthy to take the scroll because you took the cross. A song that is worth singing is a song that follows the shape of the cross. On September 11th, 1973, Victor Jara was supposed to go sing at Santiago University. Instead, he was kidnapped en route by the Pinochet coup. He was tortured for 4 days and executed. Holly Near has a song recounting this and talks about they taunted him. You remember stories of folks taunting someone, don't you? They taunted him and cut off his fingers and say, "Now will you sing?" He couldn't play the guitar without fingers, but he could still sing. And even after he was executed, the songs continued. Songs worth singing take the shape of the cross. One of the things that I've been struck by during our time together is each of our preachers have reminded us that God's glory takes the shape of the cross. Scott led us through a reading of Philippians 2. I think for the rest of my life I will remember, not though he was, but because he was in the form of God. That there is something in the glory of God that takes the shape of the cross. Cornelius reminded us that death is a prerequisite for resurrection. Paul Scott Wilson asked the question, why does our ministry so often look like death? And posed an even more counterintuitive question, why does glory so often look like death? The answer is it follows the shape of the cross. The shape of the cross gives meaning to a song. Paul Ryan said there's more than meets the eye. You know, sometimes what meets the eye, the story in front of us, he reminded us, gets so in front of us that we don't see beyond it until we see hope. God's glory is more than meets the eye. It is the shape of the empty cross. God's glory overcomes even the most ordinary times. Ellen Davis reminded us that the first time we have the reference to the glory of the Lord is in Exodus. It comes while the Hebrew people are whining to God. In my world, that's an ordinary day. Then and ever since, God's glory has not been drowned out by our whining. Then and ever since, God has presented us with a manna economy of abundance and generosity and grace in the midst of a world where the global economy is run by scarcity and gluttony. All our preachers have reminded us that the glory of God is in the shape of the cross. And by so doing, they have given us a clue of what songs are worth singing. And we, by being here, have given witness that singing is an important part of what makes God's people God's people. The music of heaven in Revelation reminds our ears and our mouths. The songs of Christ reorders power and politics. It transforms what we eat. It transforms what we sing. This is such a clear message. In Revelation, how do they put it? Every creature understood this. Every creature on the earth, in heaven, under the earth, in the sea, they all got it. The whole earth gets it. We have been blessed in these days together to hear music from so many places. And that music shows that all around the world, people get it. The writer of this text wonders whether we do, whether you and I get what the whole world already knows. What should we tell them? Well, our lives go on an endless song. But I ask you, what shall you be singing?